Get ready for Lips from Anvil, which, boy, we all love in this show anyway. What a great documentary. And what a great story, eh? Oh. It's just fabulous. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, no, absolutely. That documentary really, I thought that was one of the coolest things for a band that I've ever seen. And it was so different than the regular. I mean, it was this band, you were with them day and night on the road through all of their trials and tribulations. And there were lots of them. And the gnashing of teeth was so bad. It got so gruesome. And yet there were some things that worked out for them. But boy, to see this band try to fight and kick and scream their way to some degree of notoriety was something to behold. It was a great, really moving documentary. I was captivated by it, man.
I think it's the, is it the friendship, Lips and Rob?
With Rob,
That's a really, you know, is the feel-good part that these two guys from the age of 14 just said, we are going to make it with this heavy metal band. We'll never give up.
Right.
And here they are, you know, 36, 37 years later, still desperately trying to make it when all the people that were sort of in their zone, the Metallicas and the Megadeths, all of them made it really bigger, the people that were supposed to, and they were left behind with no record deal and really no significant CD sales.
Yeah, and the funny thing is I didn't get the feeling either that they really ever wanted to be anything that incredibly huge anyway. They just wanted to kind of make it, not have to...
Yeah, they wanted to, play music
and yeah.
They wanted people to love their music. But, you know, the problem was, as you see in the documentary, is that their families are getting a little bit frustrated with these guys working these kind of candy or these part-time jobs, which are always put second because of Anvil's concert dates.
Yep.
You know, if they ever get a shot to do anything, they just drop everything to go do that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're really struggling financially and borrowing money.
Oh,
and
what a struggle. Oh! You know, they say to this day that every... I'm trying to remember the quote. In every town, there's anywhere between 100 and 1,200 Anvil fans per town.
That's very interesting.
Which is fine with them. They find that to be perfectly satisfying. But the emotion in the film is real. And
it's
captured so well. I mean, wow, that's why you really feel like you're really right there with them. You
know, pulling for them. You got to pull for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're good guys. And they're from Canada. They really remind me of typical, you know, just solid partying, rock and rolling Canadians with good hearts.
Yeah, you want them to make it so bad.
And
you really do, yeah.
What takes up the better portion of the movie is their European tour. And, you know, this band, I mean, should they even have a tour of the United States? Debatable. A European tour? Well, there were people that knew about him in Europe, amazingly, but the girl that set it up was a fan, and she just wasn't...
Oh, boy.
She just didn't have the wherewithal to really set up a tour, so they end up playing gigs to 30 or 40 people, which is so sad. I mean, you want to cry when you see these guys.
Oh, man.
Who've been playing for 35, 37 years, and they're playing in front of 20 people at some dump in Hungary or wherever the hell they were playing.
God, yeah, some of the ineptness from the management side of the equation is just
like,
so bad.
We're not getting paid.
Oh, man.
That's when Lips almost completely loses it.
Yeah, that one place where there was one person, that dude in that chair, oh my God, that guy in that crazy chair rolling around. God almighty, what a grim deal.
Here's a little portion from the bar that didn't want to pay them.
You are too late. If I was too late, I wouldn't have played, pal. You're going to pay me. Most of the people go and wait. I did my full set. I did my work. I want to get paid.
Sorry, you should have told
us
you weren't paying us before we played. And we wouldn't play.
You pay me.
You're going to
kick your ass. Yeah, I am crazy. I just worked my ass off and you won't pay me. You're a mother.
Give me my business card.
You're a lawyer.
You played in front of people here tonight. You were screwed. You had a manager. Anvil should be playing in front of, I don't know, 1,000 minimum people every night in Europe. That's my opinion. Given your reputation, you should be playing in front of 1,000 people every night, and you are not. Now you've got to ask yourself, why are you not doing that?
Well, I've been asking myself that for 28
years. Because you've got a manager.
Yeah, I can answer that in one word. Two words. We haven't got good management.
Not exactly three words there.
Four words, five words, six words. How about 20? We don't have a GDM, F&CS, and manager, and I'll tell you.
Now, let me read some lyrics from a song called Toe Jam by the group Anvil. Dig a little deeper, hip your partner, make her shout, back to front, side to side, tip your cap and... Down with her fishnets, up with her skirt, dig a little deeper till you hit pay dirt.
The first time I seen you was at, across the street from where I live when you played in Toronto. You went to a video game place.
It's right his lips meeting a guy from Vanilla Fudge, Carmen Epice, whatever the hell his name is.
Wolfman, and we've written a song called Tall and Teasing. She was a really, really tall chick with long black hair.
I don't remember. I'll see you later.
Okay.
Can you believe the people we're meeting?
Well, here they come, and now, who else but Lips from the band Anvil? Hey, it's Lips from Anvil! Oh! Lips!
Hey!
How you doing, Lips?
Good, man.
Wow, it's the man.
Mike and I are both huge fans of the movie. We didn't know the band, of course, but, man, we really, really love the movie.
Oh, that movie was fantastic, man.
Thanks very much, man. I appreciate that.
I feel like I totally know you, man, backwards and forwards from watching that. We were right there with you through the whole experience, just cringing and sharing your joy and sharing your sorrow, which there was a lot of.
Yeah, Lips, I've been dying to know what was the lowest point in that movie, because the movie really just covers that one tour of Europe that kind of fan in Europe set up for you, and there were just some really tough times. What was the point where you just wanted to die almost?
It wasn't in the movie.
What was it then, Lips? What was it?
Through the Eastern Bloc of Europe was insane because, you know, we got all these crazy directions written down by Tiziana. Well, what do you expect? So we take a side road into the woods.
Oh, boy.
And, like, you're in a camper van. There is no backing up. You don't back up out of here. You can't turn around. You're in the middle of the woods.
Oh, man.
On the road in the winter.
Oh, crap.
So the only way to go is forward.
So did you get out of it?
I'm sound asleep, and the next thing I know, I'm being tossed around in the bunk like crazy.
Yeah, like a rag doll with all the bumpiness.
And I'm hearing like all like branches scraping the sides of the.
Oh, God.
So I take a look out the window and I nothing but blackness and all these branches, right?
Oh, boy.
And
oh, man.
I look out the front and it's like this snowy trail and there's no way to turn around, no way to back up. We just had to keep going.
Yeah, at that point, was just
and
like,
it's like
what
I'm
you guys
biting
thinking?
My nails. God, get us through here. Just get us out of here. How? And you take a look over the side, and there's a gully 1,000 feet down.
Oh my God!
Like just slip any slip, you're dead, right?
Oh my God! Were you screaming? Whose idea was this?
All you're doing is we got to survive. Just keep it straight. Let's get through. And it was the weirdest thing because when we got to the end of the road, which was about an hour and a half later, this was supposed to be a shortcut, we end up right on the highway where we were supposed to.
Oh, no
wow,
kidding.
After all that.
And it was really, like, really weird. Like, wow, we found our way out of there. Like, and it was a shortcut, but holy shit. We survived.
At any point, did you look at the gas gauge?
Yeah, and the gas gauges, we had virtually no gas.
Oh, man.
And we finally got, so, and then, like, 2 miles from where we came out of the woods, there was a gas station. So we pull into the gas station, and the guy wouldn't take euros.
Oh, man.
So we're standing around the pumps and trying to figure out how the hell are we going to do this. This German guy pulls into the gas station, and we buy money off him.
Did he rip you off, Lips?
And it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, right? And you're going like, we're
Oh my God.
Did the guy that you bought the money from, did he rip you off?
Yeah.
Of course he did.
He charged us more than it was worth, obviously. But
that's okay, right? I mean, hell.
Okay. It got us out of there.
That's right. It doesn't matter.
Well, I'll tell you what was really painful watching, and I don't know if it was this bad. Well, it probably was. When you guys were stuck in the train station and you'd missed your train and you had all that equipment
and you guys were
really tired and you didn't know what train was going to get you where you needed to go and you got gig scheduled. I don't know. I just felt like I just don't think I could have persevered through all this.
No.
We called back to the promoters and they said, oh, there's some guys who sell T-shirts and friends of theirs that can give you a lift because they're from where you're going.
Wow.
So the promoter from the Sweden Rock ran out to the, as these guys were packing up all their T-shirts and stuff, and said, hey, man, the guys in Anvil are at the train station. Can you go pick them up? And they said, sure, we're big fans. We'd love to do it.
No.
Oh, how awesome.
God, it sounds like, boy, I tell you, you had supernatural intervention at all times looking over you, whether on that horrible road or something like that.
It really did seem that way. And actually, in retrospect, when you actually investigate it, it really seems like we did.
Yeah, seriously, well, man.
What a weird coincidence. Yeah. And you keep writing it off as coincidence, and then all of a sudden, after it's all said and done, you're going, how do you have so many coincidences of getting yourself out of
that's
trouble?
That's right, at some
it's
point.
Like, who's been watching over us? And even something that I said when we went to Stonehenge was that it's like somebody's, and something is protecting us, something is watching over us.
Yes. Well,
and
absolutely.
I had that feeling. It's as if the thing was scripted by God or something.
Well, man, when you really seriously, when you have that many coincidences strung together, there's something going on, you know?
Well, what a movie it is. It's really, you know, if you're a fan of rock and roll, I think it's one of the best rock documentaries ever made. And
it's
so atypical. It's so different from the other ones. I could never quite figure out what exactly happened to Anvil, because you watched the beginning of the movie, and I watched it over again this morning because I knew we were going to talk to you. I'm getting ready for work and I'm watching, you know, it's the part where Slash comes on and he's talking about how all these bands were sort of in the same boat, and every other band really made it big, and then there was Anvil, and Slash just says, you know, for whatever reason, you know, luck of the draw, it just didn't happen for these guys. And you know, you're there with the Flying V and you're playing it with a dildo and you got that big smile on your face and you got a big crowd, and it's back in 1984, and Metal is Metal, that's really one of your big tunes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything looks so good. And where did it go south? I mean,
it's really, really simple. Just as it's just as quickly and easily as something can go great and miraculous, and just like this did with the movie, it can go the other way, just like that, the snap of a finger. So in if you think about it in those terms, it's basically simple. We were signed to a Canadian independent label. And we started getting big. And, of course, they couldn't back it.
Well, why wouldn't usually a major label will pick it up at that point? You know, maybe they make a financial arrangement. The big label pays the independent, you know, $50,000. You know, why didn't that happen?
The Canadian label did not want a license to a U.S. label. We'd gained a lot of ground, and things were happening, and particularly in the U.K. We've got a manager involved who was Aerosmith's manager, David Krebs, and right away he's going, okay, let's start rocking, boys. And he calls all of his buddies at the major labels, and they're going, okay, we'll take Anvil, we'll be glad to. And David goes back to the label that we're signed to. He goes, okay, I got you licensing deals. And the guy goes, we're not relinquishing it. How are we going to get them known in the United States? It goes, it's not our problem. You can get them a record deal from here on in, but they're not touching the first three albums. We're not licensing them to anybody outside the country.
Well, why couldn't the fourth and fifth album, you know, be done on a major label in the U.S.?
Because the major labels wanted our history. They didn't want to sign us three albums in when not have access to those first three albums.
Oh, man. It just seems like people find ways to overcome these things, unfortunately, for whatever reason.
That's how simple it is.
Yeah. No, I understand.
Well, we want metal on metal and forge and fire and hard and heavy. How come we can't have it? Well, we can't have it. Forget it. We'll just take a new band like Metallica, and they're just starting out, and they're American, and who cares?
Mm-hmm. Well, what a bitch. However, things have turned around, like you said, as easily as things can go positive, they go negative. But now we're having the happy ending.
It. And you know what? I've never been bitter about it, or even in a certain sense, maybe disappointed, but certainly never bitter.
Well, I'll tell you, the way the documentary ended, it was so triumphant, and I was so happy for you guys. And even that looked like it might be a disaster before all of a sudden, no, it's okay in the very end, and all hell broke loose. And the DVD got to be so popular, and all the people that never heard from you saw you on the late night TV and started watching the documentary. And I thought, certainly, man, you guys are finally on the road now. And in terms of your age, I mean, we're all acquainted and very much accept rock bands that are deep into their 50s and 60s, even with the Stones and all that sort of thing. So that's an easy thing to get past. Yeah, so
it's becoming acceptable. It's as if the movie turns into real life.
Right, that's what I was going to say. It's almost like you step off the film into the real world, like transported right in, like you materialize right then and there.
The show in Japan continues at the cross.
Okay, exactly. So same clothes, same everything. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's very powerful, man. And have you found, too, that, after the documentary, there was so much popularity, it seems to me anyway, I got that feeling. Did, in fact, after the airing of that, did you notice a very palpable jump in your popularity and in your recognition factor and all that sort of thing?
The recognition factor is right out of right through the roof. Man.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, and I'm so, not used to it.
Yeah.
Bizarre. Like, I see this blonde chick and a guy walking towards me, and the blonde chick starts flipping out. I just saw your movie. She's going, I watched it three times. I went into the recording studio, and I'm you inspired me so much. Hi, I'm Courtney Love, and she walks away.
Oh, no kidding. Oh,
and it's like my jaw drops, and I'm going, oh, my God, that was Courtney Love.
Wow. Oh, yeah, surreal.
Lips, you know,
right,
in the movie,
exactly.
When guys like Lars and Slash and Lemmy and some of those people in the movie are talking about Anvil and, the fact that they seem to respect you and they thought you guys, had a good shot back in the day. When you saw them in the movie, first of all, I'm sure it kind of blew your mind, but did you kind of wonder, boy, why didn't, why couldn't we have ever talked to these guys and maybe had them help us get that break we've been looking for?
That's a very common question, and it's a very, very simple answer. What am I bringing to the table? How many people, if you've never been heard of, are coming to see you? And why should they put you on their concert when they can get somebody who will give them tour support? Like,
right.
That's what tour support means. When you go out and you get and that's what got pulled from us when we got pulled out of our original record deal and not supplied with another record deal is that there was no support.
Well, some guys' lips, like the Rolling Stones, for example, they have people open shows for them who have fallen on hard times. You know, even Bo Diddley and Bo's a pretty big guy, but maybe Bo's not the best example, but they've given that opening slot to a lot of acts that they knew from way back in the day, who for whatever reason have really hit on hard times and are struggling.
There is definitely very, very generous and outgoing musicians. Certainly the guys in AC/DC, they gave us the opportunity. Basically, you're not going to get opening slots unless you're bringing something to the table. End of story. Just the way it works. It's business. That's the way it is.
Hey, Lips, there's so many questions from the movie that are kind of left hanging, and I just, I kept thinking, oh, geez, I wish I could watch it over again and write down all those things I wondered about. Like, for example, did you finally pay your sister back?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did she expect to get paid back?
No, not really. There was never... You have to understand that the fact that a Spielberg screenwriter came and did a movie, there wasn't much of a risk. You know what I mean? But it meant the world's eye is on me. Everything I do from here on in, I better make sure it's the best it could possibly be.
The CD that you guys produced in England with that guy, which was, when you went to Stonehenge.
Chris Angarides, and that's This Is 13, yeah.
And that was a real tough part of the movie. I mean, you guys were really, you and Rob, of course, were struggling with, you were having some disagreements.
Well, there's there was an incredible, well, stuff that you don't see in the film. There was incredible financial stress.
Oh yeah, no, I totally understood it. But during that time, at the same time that's going on, you did know. Well, the documentary's being shot, so we do. I mean, you knew that there was a chance that the documentary alone would pull you out of this mess.
Well, there was no guarantee of it.
Right.
It's just only the intuition that this is my moment.
Right.
Is there something going on, too, after all the misfires over the years where you thought, well, this could, you know, the documentary could be one more thing that doesn't quite do it? I mean, was that sort of sense of doom there also? Because you have a great, you're so optimistic and so glass half full, as I'm sure you had to be to keep it together all that time. But was there also that feeling that, well, this could be like everything else and just kind of not work?
Yeah, well, you know what? That's doubt and fear. You have to do, in order to persevere, is push those things out. You have to.
Oh, yeah, to keep even
because,
be going
because
at that point.
Because I really believe, and I've really come to believe that if your expectations that are that you are going to fail, you will fail.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's what I think we and probably so many people admired about that movie was just, first of all, the incredible friendship that you guys had and your indomitable will, that sense of manifest destiny, we will survive, and the fact that you just never gave up. And I think that movie has so many great messages in it. It really does.
You know what's really fascinating is that this is much different than the average band, okay? And what has made it so drastically different is when people are emotionally attached to it. It has a completely different. It's not just to see the band. You're going to see your friends.
Oh yeah, no,
yeah,
no,
sure.
It's just like when we started this conversation. I feel like I know you. You
no,
do know me.
Yeah, that's.
You met my mother, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying when we first started off. I was talking about about going to that documentary. You really get to know you guys, and we shared your joys and your sorrow, which was a lot of. And so you're right. When you appear on the stage, it's like there they are. Yeah, it's not just a rock show like you're seeing
any number
of rock bands. And this is like,
and not only that, you want to show your gratitude as an audience. You want to show your gratitude, and as me, you're seeing me absorbing that and enjoying the hell out of my life. You're part of the epilogue.
Well, you must be fed a lot of energy from the crowds. I got to believe that all the crowds feel this way, and they must transmit to you just a ton of love and energy that guys are able to live
it's
on.
It's completely different. Like we did a tour with Saxon in the UK, and the feeling in the crowd is, for us is completely different from the way it was for Saxon.
Yeah.
They don't know Biff like they know Lips.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, it's
so
really.
They see me enjoying myself and I've got a smile on my face. They know they've put that smile on my face.
Well, hey, nothing beats a happy ending, and I'm assuming Rob is doing just as well as you are.
I certainly hope so, and I think it's important for everybody to know that after the show, I mean, you don't have to buy the special ticket to meet me, okay? That's not necessarily what you're paying for when you buy that special ticket.
Lips is such a nice guy. I mean, he should be wanting to get the extra dough in, but he wants everybody to know that...
you're paying for is actually the copy of the DVD, the CD, and the fanny pack.
Sure.
We go out of our way and have gone out of our way. And in fact, on the entire UK tour, after every show, we stood outside the venue from 5 minutes after we finished playing and waited outside for everybody to come out and meet with us.
No,
well,
man.
I'm sure a lot of people will be waiting to meet you and vice versa. And that's great to know, Lips. And we sure appreciate the time. And I hope things go great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. This is all a dream come true, man.
Yeah, well, absolutely. No doubt about that.
Everybody's enjoying the hell out of it. And again, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Okay, no problem, man. We'll see you. We'll see you real soon.
Okay, you got it, Lips.
Right. Okay, Steve. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.